dressed with this my slip hanging out. I didn't feel like going and changing. So, anybody like to start? I have asked a few people if they would be willing to share something.
Well, since you talked about having your slip hanging out, but this is not me, it just happened on the way. We were driving out here from Madison, Wisconsin, and we stopped for gas in Williston, North Dakota, or someplace like that. And my husband came out of the gas station. He said, "You have to go in and tell this lady that her skirt is tucked into her pantyhose." It was a service station that sold all sorts of stuff, you know, she was going all over it. And so, I did. This poor lady, she was 65, and she had one of these brand new, she had like kind of like a peasant skirt, so it was really woolly. She wasn't quite used to it. She was just mortified, the poor lady, but she was really thankful that I told her.
You didn't tell her that your husband told her to.
No, I didn't. I was glad he didn't tell her, because who knows? But I can tell just one, you know. But it's hard, I mean, when you put it in the context of producing belly laughs. Oh. I'm not sure my story can do
how
that.
How about just a little chest laugh?
Okay, I might provide just a little chest laugh. The year before Twiggy became popular, all right, was the year that all the girls in my class began to develop except me. I know, it's hard to believe now. There was a time. And
this is not going to be a belly laugh.
No. I and this guy, from my homeroom, were nominated the king and queen of the Valentine dance after school at 3:15 on a Wednesday. Big event. And so I went into the bathroom and stuffed my training bra, as it were. I don't know what I was training them to do. With toilet paper. And sometime during the dance, it shifted. And it was an embarrassing
moment.
Yeah, okay.
You can't kind of, you know, arrange it.
Thank you for sharing.
But things have changed.
Some of us remain thankful to Twiggy.
Not all of us.
Who's Twiggy?
Oh, this gets
dirty. Who else in this room doesn't know who that is?
Thank you.
Okay, who's Twiggy? Come on, so
Twiggy
was a historical.
Flat-chested model.
Yeah. Real British model.
And so just the second we started developing breasts, Twiggy got popular and you shouldn't have any anymore.
Thank goodness.
She's been popular in the last few years again.
And she has.
She's got hips and stuff. She's a little bigger.
Great.
Well, as long as we're on female anatomy. This is not a story that happened to me, but
sure.
Honestly, it happened to a friend of mine.
Right.
Which really after here, you'll know it was me. I think she was in high school, but I think it just is about the funniest or most embarrassing thing I can think of. She was in high school, and she went into, it was in Montana, and she went into this store that was sort of like a really large, you know, drugstore, and has all those, you know, Kmart kind of everything there sort of store. And she went in to get some Tampax, and I had to get the brand right. And they went down the aisle and got them, and you know, when you're an adolescent, you're sort of embarrassed when you take those up to the, you know, the checkout and everything. They got up to the checkout, and there wasn't a price on it. So the lady got on the microphone and said, you know, "Can we have a price check on Tampax?" And, you know, that was embarrassing enough. But then there was silence for a while, and nothing happened. And then finally another male voice got on the microphone and said, "Are those the kind you push in with your finger or pound in with the hammer?" And thought that they had said thumbtack.
Oh,
in the same vein. I don't know if this happens to anyone else. I've got three daughters, and I can never understand why they never know what's going to happen or have decided that it would never happen again. They never have any when the time comes. Oh, Dad, I've got to get out and go down to the supermarket. So I've been constantly buying this.
Thumbtack.
That's it. You have three daughters that we've got. Don't know whether you know, but well, you probably don't. But Rebecca, the middle one, the dark-haired one, is adopted, and her heritage is that she's a Maori, or strongly part Maori, which is the native race in New Zealand, which is where all our kids were born.
Polynesian.
And when she was very young, we learned very quickly that we had to put up with incredible comments about this. People would say things like, you know, if she got nappy rash, like every kid gets, would say, mm-hmm. Oh yes, that's because
they
she's a Maori, you know.
Diaper rash.
They say, oh yes, because if she got a cold or anything like that, it's the Maori blood and everything like that. Anyway, one day we were invited round to a friend's house, and what age was she?
About 8 months old.
And I was sitting having a beer with this guy that I had met for the first time, never met him before. And we're just sitting at the counter in the kitchen, and the various kids were playing around, and Rebecca was sitting there on the floor, and she was such a placid, gentle, smiling child in the ring. And we're drinking away at our beer, and he's looking at her, he said, you know, and he knew who I was, and I was her father, and that Jen was her mother, and everything. And he said, you know, you'd swear that child is Maori blood. And I said to him, ah, yes, mother strayed. That wasn't embarrassing for me, but I think he was.
Well, unfortunately, I have no composure. I would have loved to have let him squirm for at least a half an hour, but I dissolved on the floor in gales of laughter. But anyway, he was duly embarrassed.
John, you look like you have one.
I was wondering what the rules were. Maybe it's funny, maybe it isn't. Karen was, we were splurging one time and we went to Magnum's. We figured, well, you know, we had some extra bucks. They have pretty lingerie, and I don't know why they did this, but I went over to the lingerie counter or some special place they had, and they had a little brochure, and being an engineer, I looked at this thing, and I had some rules for figuring out what size bra you ought to get for your wife. And I looked at this, and I started calculating. It didn't work. And I said, this is impossible. And this lady comes over, and she's a very nice-looking lady, you know. She looks at me, well, like, poor boy, you don't know what's going on. And I had to show her. And I went around there. You know, this is my friend. That was my story.
Great.
Are you a regular now at lingerie counters? Making sure they got their system correct.
We haven't got any money in
the law. He has given into the system.
Has he? Okay.
Who's next?
I have one that's kind of a surprise, perhaps not embarrassment. It goes back a long time. In the tail end of World War II, I ended up in the infantry, and in the last week of the war, we were roaring down the highway in Austria, just sort of going down the road because there wasn't much happening. Things were very disorganized. And I was known as a photographer in my little group, and a friend of mine had bought or found or gotten hold of a Leica camera, except it was missing one critical take-up spool. So he came to me and he said, we went through a pretty big town about 20 miles there. Let's go back there and maybe we can find a camera store and I can get this critical part for my camera. So I said, all right, we'll go back. So we went back in his Jeep, and it was very interesting because we had really gone through those towns and kept going. And we went into this town, and you'd look down the side streets, and you'd see German soldiers sort of trying to get out of sight. And it was kind of creepy because they just got off the road and let us go by. But we couldn't find a camera store. That was our main mission. Finally, we found a rather important looking building and went into it, and we're walking up and down the corridor. Heard a lot of voices behind one big ornately carved door. Well, we knew there were some people there. At least we could find out something. So we knocked. The voices all stopped. And then we could hear somebody walking across the room to the door, and it was opened. And here was this, obviously a big conference room, a long carved table with people sitting on it, and the very end, this very impressive looking Burgermeister, I suppose you'd call him, in the official uniform, the long beard. They stared at us, and we were a corporal and a PFC, American uniform. And finally, the man at the end turned to a lady and spoke to her in German, and she interpreted in English and said to us two, are you the delegation from the United States Army which will come to help us form our new government? I was trying to think of something to say, but my partner said, no, but could you tell me where to get the piece to my camera? What an opportunity.
All right.
Change
history. Just imagine what could happen.
Yeah.
Now that there's a little lull here and there's lots of people here now, I'd like just to turn to the person next to you and both sides of you, if there's two people on both sides of you, share your name, where you're from, and something embarrassing that you wouldn't dare tell the whole group. Okay? Get to know each other.
Turn up the microphone.
We'll give you a chance later. Okay, now you at least know the names of somebody next to you that you didn't know, or maybe you know a little bit more about them. Plus, once you've told somebody else, maybe you can tell the whole group, or you can encourage, get some encouragement from your colleagues there. Open it up again. Did anybody hear any good stories they like to tell?
I had this friend.
Yeah, I had this friend.
I feel like having a million of those.
Yeah, somebody back here said my name. There.
Okay.
Close your eyes, it'll be okay.
It was when I was in eighth grade, and I had been asked to babysit. So the father of the child I was going to babysit came and picked me up at my parents' house. And he was sitting in the driver's seat, of course, and the little girl I was going to babysit was sitting on the seat next to him. And as I got to the car, I saw this, and so I decided that rather than try and sit in the front seat and get it kind of squished, that I would just, you know, go to the back seat. Well, for some reason, I had it in my head that it was a two-door car.
I was thinking about those times that are embarrassing for other people, You know that they'd be embarrassed, for example, if they knew that there was their fly was open or the cross ramp was hanging out. But you don't know exactly how to tell them, right? You know, you don't want to be the one to go up and say, zip your fly. And Jerry was at O'Hara Airport, Chicago, and he saw this woman walking down the court concourse very confidently and boldly, you know, like she owned the place. And she had a toilet seat protected. About the spot inside of a quarter on the back of a, well, she says a man's head, and she means it, you know, which isn't visible in the mirror. I mean, there's no way I could see it. And we all have these vulnerable or exposed or, and I just think it's hilarious that we think we're so together.
Meanwhile, the toilet seat is
quick one. My sister's a medical doctor, and when she first qualified, she specialized in lung diseases, and she was working in this x-ray department in Britain, and a man came in for an x-ray, and she directed him in the usual medical efficient manner, go into that cubicle strip and tie your suspenders around your waist. And a few minutes later, this man appeared, stark naked, with his socks. In Britain, it's really braces, and you take your braces off and tie them to keep your pants up. They didn't use belts at the time. They would tie the braces around their waist to keep their pants up.
I remember one that is on account of somebody else, my mother, unfortunately, and that's somewhat embarrassing, and it is funny too, for her it was terribly embarrassing. John and I were working, and she wanted, on her, I have to say that she was visiting from Germany. She doesn't know any English, but she wanted to do something worthwhile, so she wanted to bake us a cake when we came from work. But not being able to read English, she just did what she always does. But it looked beautiful when we came home. She had a beautiful cake ready, but unfortunately it tasted terrible. And when we asked her what ingredients she used, she just showed us. And instead of cornstarch, she had used powdered sugar. So she had used sugar and powdered sugar in addition, and no flour.
Oh.
And she was just so
embarrassed. Tell your Dwayne story that you told me this afternoon.
You all know Dwayne, who just left. He came down to Rock Island. He was taking some koto lessons from a professor that's lived in Japan that we have on our campus. And he called me and asked if he could stay with me the times he was down to study. So after that, I think the first time he came down, we had gone to an evening concert or something together and came home, and I said, would you like some tea? And he said, oh, sure. So I turned on the water and fixed him this herbal tea, and all of a sudden he made such a face, and he said, it's so vinegary. I said, well, that's funny. And I showed him the tea bag, and I said, it shouldn't be. And I thought, well, I better taste it too. And started to laugh because I realized after that I had been cleaning the tea kettle that day with vinegar to get the tartar out. And I forgot to empty it, you know. So I made the tea with the vinegar. He has hasn't forgotten it either. Next time he saw me today, too. You know, enjoy the vinegar tea at my house. I have one that can tell that Carol Nolte is here. She's a pastor in Los Angeles. She's on the board and will be coming. She always has some crazy story to tell him. She called me just a few weeks ago. You maybe have heard the story. You see her, don't you?
Yeah.
In LA? And she said, I don't think this would have been told to a regular pastor, but I'm a woman. So she said this little elderly woman in her congregation came and told her this story. Said her neighbor was very wealthy and had gone shopping to a place like I Magnus, I guess. And came home with a chauffeur and just had lots of bundles. So she said, you'll have to help me carry them in. So he carried them in. She got to the door and she said, now, James, I want you to take those to my bedroom. So he did. And she says, and will you please close the door? And then she said, I want you to come over here. And she says, will you unbutton my blouse? So he did. And she says, now take off my skirt. And he did. And she says, and okay, take off my bra. And he did. And she said, and now my pants. And he did. And she said, and next time you wear my clothes, you're going to be fired. James, your servant, was wearing her clothes. I mean, you think it's going to be fancy.
Everybody get it. Yeah. Leo, you had your
hand. Just a little quick, not only embarrassing, but sad, too. It has to do with food. Dwayne's mother lived with us for the last 4 years of her life, and she was suffering from Alzheimer's. And so strange, interesting events would happen. And at church, they would often follow the service with a coffee hour, a social hour. And she loved going to those. And older people oftentimes have a habit of hoarding food. And she also had the habit of always keeping her purse closely clutched to her side. And we were involved and distracted visiting with others. And then suddenly spied Dwayne's mother out of the corner of her eye, looking at the beautiful arrangement of crackers around a cheese ball. And she reached for the cheese ball. You know, the whole cheese ball put in her purse. We didn't say anything, nor did the others. But when we walked into our home at the end of the event, I quickly distracted her and took the purse and removed the cheese ball. Oh.
When I was about 8, my brother was 16. He was my closest sibling, and so we were the only two living at home anymore. And I grew up on a farm, and this is really embarrassing to even tell. My dad had been cutting wood in the woods for firewood, and his glasses had gotten flipped off by a branch, and he hadn't noticed it. Came home and realized, where's my glasses? And he figured that's what had happened. And so my mom and dad and brother Jim and I all went out to look for Dad's glasses in the woods. And it was a time of year when the ground was a little bit frosty. And, excuse me, Mom and Dad went one way and Jim and I went another way, and we were off and off and looking. And I see these old berries on the ground. I said, Wow, look at these great berries. And Jim says, yeah, why don't you pick some up? Mom will make a pie and take them home. So I'm stuffing these berries in my mouth. They're hard. You know, it's frozen. I'm stuffing these berries in my pocket. And finally it comes to me, Mom, Dad, and Jim and I meet up again, the four of us. Dad had found his glasses, so we're heading home. And I'm all excited. Mom, will you make me a pie? I picked all these berries. I dig out deer turds. Oh, pocket that I had collected And my brother had told me that, you know, and he says, yeah, she'll make you a deer berry. So every time I walk around the village and I see the deer berry pie. And that, I don't know about your family, but when our family gets together for Thanksgiving, sit around and tell stories. And they're usually the same stories every year, and it's kind of like we sit around and we say, okay, let's just tell the deerberry story. That's one of the moments. I mean, it's more embarrassing now as an adult than it was back then. Let's hear some stories from upstairs. You know, most people can't, some people can't even see you. So. Any stories up there?
I suppose I could tell one.
I suppose.
Well, you were talking about babysitting. This is, and mothers, I guess, this will relate to my mom. When she was in college, she earned some extra money, so she would do babysitting jobs. She would babysit, and she would always, you know, work with this regular family. But then one time, she decided to take an extra job, which no other kid in the college would want to do, with this family. And it was babysitting this old, elderly gentleman, as they put it. So she went over to the house, and the mother left, and she said, all you need to do is just stay down here. He's upstairs resting, and you can watch TV, you can eat whatever you like. And so the lady left, and my mother was sitting there watching TV, and all of a sudden she heard some noises, and it was the elderly man coming down the stairs. And so she said, oh, are you okay? And she walked to the stairs, and there he was, stark naked, sitting on the stairs, and he said, come on up, come on up. He kept saying this over and over again. It was kind of scary, but she quickly called the mother and just sat there in horrified. Waiting for the return.
Just your normal baby.
Yeah, right. Normal baby, right.
Kind of a tense moment for a while.
My most embarrassing moments happened in high school. And,
often they do.
I had a friend named Bert Holt, a wonderful guy, great sense of humor. And what he used to do in the back of the class, we always sat together in class, and he'd always let farts and say, Grant. And so I always was looking for a way to get back. You know how that, I mean, there's nothing worse than high school. One day in the hallway, Bert was walking along with a girl that he was trying to make time with. And I was joking and kidding and beginning to irritate him. And so he decided he was going to reach back and goose me. Well, I'd stepped aside and watched as he reached back and goosed our geometry teacher. The look on Bert's face when he turned around is one of the high points of my life. So I remember that, and he got a friend.
Yes.
Well, it was a word that brought up an interesting thing. If anybody has ever taken a freeway in Germany,
right,
and exited. You know, like we have an off-ramp here. Well, their off-ramps say, Ausfahrt.
Or if they wish you a good travel, a good trip, they say, Gute Fahrt.
I'd like to publicly thank the Germans for those signs, because they kept a 7- and 9-year-old children of ours entertained. I had never ceased to humor them. You know, they saw me.
I was thinking the other day, watching our signs, our highways have got a lot of signs that say, pass with care, and I was thinking, a person from another country might read that as, pass with car,
oh.
And they would wonder, well, what else?
Yeah, leave it behind.
I used to teach with a woman from England, and on our first day of school last year, she said to the children, it was time for lunch, she said, children, go to the toilet and wash your hands. Oh. Oh. I just died.
I had a friend that was at a talent show once, and a girl got up and I said, just picked up the music beforehand because she got up and said, I say tomato, you say tomato, I say potato, you say potato. I don't know that song.
Yeah, sometimes they're not as funny when you tell them, but most of mine happened in adolescence as well, including I went to a high school that was so small that when the football team played, it sort of wiped out the whole band. So as a ninth grader, I got to play in the senior high band, and I was in love with the band director. I mean, he did both senior high and junior high, and I really adored him. And of course, being able to play with the upperclassmen was quite an honor. And we were rehearsing for a football game out on the football field, practicing this, what do you call it,
march
formations and all this kind of stuff. And I was playing the trumpet, and I was either 8th or 9th grade, I think. And pantyhose had not been yet discovered, and so I had a garter belt on, and we were marching along, and I was playing my trumpet, and one of my garter belts, both back and front, broke or just burst, and so my nylon started falling down my leg. And I was trying to play this horn and try to kind of pull it back up, and it was getting really more difficult, and I was getting out of step and everything. And then, unbelievably, the other one also broke, and I burst into tears. I mean, all these upperclassmen, and I started running off the football field, and the band director starts yelling my name, Brawlsma, get back here, and I just burst into tears and kept running away. And then a few years ago, I was really fortunate to be able to give a talk in Washington, D.C., and it was in the really large hotel there where Reagan was shot or whatever. And I went, it was like at the coffee break, and some person, a taller man, was kind of standing behind me drinking his coffee or whatever. Anyway, someone bumped him, or I bumped him, I don't know what happened, and he spilled coffee down like this kind of whole side, and I had this really white, kind of sheer blouse on and a gray kind of really nice skirt, and I panicked and ran into the bathroom, and the blouse was so sheer that there was a push blower dryer or whatever, and I took off my blouse and sort of rinsed it out and was kind of drying it, but I'd also taken the skirt off and laid it there and had tried to sort of spot it. And this woman came in who was like one of these really helpful little mother types and was saying, oh my goodness, you poor thing, and I was supposed to talk like in just a really short time. And anyway, I turned and was kind of working on this blouse, and I just had on my, pantyhose and a camisole or something. And the next thing I turned around, she had taken my skirt and dumped it entirely into the sink and was washing and trying to be really helpful. And it turned out they had to switch the time, and the hotel service had to come, and they had a dryer, and I had to stand in this bathroom. The lady was trying to be so helpful.
What a story you could have told instead of that speech.
Well, I have a story, and this occurred when I was performing in Washington, D.C. We were doing a very dramatic dance, and there were three of us who did, we did roles. We were all being different aspects of mother. And the woman who was the head of the dance company was doing a very intense solo at the end of this piece, while the three of us stood in the back of the stage with our backs turned. And I happened to have a very bad cold during that performance, and the tickle began in my throat. And I fought. I used everything I knew to relax the tickle in his throat. and couldn't. And finally, the great welling cough came out. Not one, but it seemed like thousands. And I coughed, and I yelled, and I coughed, and I heaved. And all of this happening during this very dramatic and solo. But at the very end of this piece, we had to turn around and do an extremely dramatic walk down to the front of the stage. Well, by this time, my nose was just... I mean, I kid you not, you know, there was just glistening.
How was it, Phyllis?
Glistening,
glistening.
Not as if it were down to my knees. Well, I was not about to turn around with that stuff on my face. So in quiet consultation with these two other people who were standing with me, we devised this wonderful action, and as we turned around, we all... I don't know how they did it. I just know how I did.
You'll never be able to use that motion in any letter in the church as you do it in the next 2 weeks.
We've done quite a lot of acting, and one lots of stories about acting. And in this particular play, this very fine actor was sent to stage, and it was his speech. And in the middle of it, he forgot his line. So he stood there and he waited for the prompt. It didn't come. Waited a bit longer. No prompt. He looked into the prompt corner. You know, you've got to sort of pretend that it's a moment. You know, that you're not forgetting your line. You've got to keep it up. So he glanced over into the corner and the prompt sitting there. Sound asleep. So with a gesture, he walked off the stage, ran to the prompt corner, yanked the prompt, took the book, found his place, his line, walked back onto the stage, and promptly forgot the line. Another one is at the play Lohan Green of the ballet.
Lohan Green,
where a swan comes on at some stage, right at the end of this tenor's great aria. Is that right? And this tenor is standing there, and he hits his last note, and a very enthusiastic stagehand is pulling this swan across the stage, and he hits the note, and he's going to get on to the swan, he just misses it. Turns around and he says, "Can you tell me what time the next one?"
Yeah, the stage is full of my nearest miss, and fortunately this one worked out, so it isn't as funny as it might be. I should pretend that it didn't, but we have a perennial thing that we have done for many years when my hair was less gray and Robert's was too. The lesson by Ionesco, and the long and short of the story is that I spent the last 10 minutes of this play dead in a very awkward position. Anyway, we did it once in the round, and there was a very important prompt in the lamp, which had all kinds of symbolic significance, was a gooseneck lamp. And it was on the table with the cord going up because we were doing it in the round. I mean, we'd always done this play on a conventional stage before, and we were doing it in the round, and the cord was up like that. And in the process of this dramatic moment when I got dead, we knocked the lamp over, and I don't know what it was doing on, but anyway, I was lying on it, and it was on, and it was getting hotter and hotter and hotter, and I couldn't move, and I had decided that if I smelled smoke, that was the end of all I was going to do for art. However, we survived it. You're getting some pretty bad shots. Yeah.
Another one.
We should
would tell an acting story.
Yes, sorry. That, I think it was a village play or something like that, but it was one of these curtains that came down, and towards the end of the play, the stagehand let the curtain down too early, realized his mistake, and the actors are still acting away. And so he started pulling the curtain up again, and it stuck halfway, and the actors finished the play.
Concert choir from college for 2 years, and we stood in four rows. The guys were in the back two rows, and the women were in the front two rows. And the guys, we held hands during performances, and the guys thought that this is a great opportunity to pass things, you know, because they were covered up from the front. And so they passed funny things to try to make everyone laugh down the line, you know, like Vaseline, you know, things like that, so that people would kind of. And one time, I guess, this was before I was in choir, they were passing a Nerf football down, and it just shot out in the middle of a song and rolled right down the aisle because we were all singing church. And the director just kind of, you know, was watching, he was directing, and he just kind of watched it shoot out of the choir and roll past him. And just kept going completely, and everyone is, you know, laughing so hard that they can't sing anymore. And then he just stops and just pretends like nothing ever happened, like that Nerf football never did that.
I have one. When I was, I played basketball for 4 years at a college. When I was a freshman, I was a bench warmer. The first 5 games of the season, I didn't play. And so it was the fifth game, and my parents were at the game. And we were losing by 35, 40 points. So I got to go in, first time in college. And I was so excited, I was so nervous. I go in, and like in 3 minutes, I commit 3 fouls. So he pulls me right out again and says, you know, calm down, you're doing fine. Just, you know, take a breath and relax. Puts me back in, and we're doing, we put on a full court press. And I thought we were on defense. And you were really on offense. And here I am playing defense on this woman, and the coach is yelling, "Go!" And I just go, "Oh!" I turn around, oh, it was just awful.
Yeah. I got a sports story too. This was I played football for Sinola, and the last time I carried the ball, we were playing a team that had him. You might have read about him in the News Digest. The player, he doesn't have any legs. And he was playing nose guard, and it was like third down and two to go, and I was playing fullback, and coach called the draw, which is where they fake a pass, and then I get it and run forward. And I got the ball, and I run forward, and somebody tackles me, and the whole other side of the stadium just starts screaming and yelling, and I look down, and the guy with no legs had just tackled me, and...
I guess there's a lot of funny stories about announcements here at Holden.
Oh.
And maybe some of these happened while Janet was here, but they get kind of told on and on. And Dan Erlander, I guess, who's was spent a lot of time up here, and he'll be here in the month of July, I guess. Should never be in front of a microphone, is from what I understand. But
the one time he did announce.
The one time, yes. Just not his thing. It was like an emergency or something. And you know how we say goodbye to people at the meal that are leaving? And got done saying everybody's name, then he said, and this was in the year of, you know, well, it was a few years back, 70s. And said the names of everybody, and then the people, and we're all done, and he said, okay, let's send them out with a hold and clap.
That one gets spread around a lot still.
You can tell it where you're teaching.
Behind, yeah. Oh, the orientation.
That's too much like my other one.
Yeah. One real similar to Jackie's story about her friend in the grocery store. Mary Schramm used to do the orientation all the time when I lived here in the early 80s. And Mary has this gift of
saying the wrong word often for something. You know, like, who was it, Rodney Dangerfield, that always uses the wrong word for something? Mary does this all the time, or she doesn't know it. Well, I've got two stories on her. But this one day, she was telling about how in the wintertime, it's just a winter wonderland here, and often people will do cross-country skiing and inner tubing down the hill, and some people who are really into outdoor sports in the winter will go off and have special equipment, and they put tampons on the bottom of their shoes so they can climb the mountains. What really people put on are a piece of equipment called crampons. Mary, you know, part of the
organization. I guess we wouldn't get up and move.
Yeah, it was cranky. She won't mind me telling that story because it gets told all the time. Yeah. There are lots of. Jackie did one the other day when she was doing orientation for the youth weekends we had in May. And maybe you should tell it, but she was telling them how serious we are about fire here. There are no fire drills, and that the reason for that was because we had a fire that Chalet 2 had burned and the garage had burned, and both due to fire.
I didn't even catch it.
Yours are good.
This happened just in March. It happened to my mom. It was her birthday, and a friend of hers from out of town stopped by unexpectedly. This woman's name was Anne. So my mom let Anne in and went into the kitchen. Well, my parents have two cats, and one of the cats loves to sleep on top of the refrigerator. And so they walked into the kitchen, and Anne noticed this cat up on top of the refrigerator, you know, didn't really say anything. Well, it turned around, the other cat was sprawled out on the kitchen table. So at this point, mom's thinking, Anne's probably wondering, you know, how clean this place is, cats laying everywhere. But, you know, didn't really say anything. So they sat down and they started talking. And a few minutes later, mom looked up on the counter, and the cat that had been up on top of the refrigerator was standing on the counter drinking out of the faucet, kitchen faucet, because she likes fresh water out of the faucet. So mom got up to move the cat. Well, she started throwing up on the counter. So mom's putting that cat onto the floor so she'd finish throwing up on the floor. Meanwhile, the other cat, which of course she had gotten off the table, had at that time when my mom's back was turned, had jumped up onto the table and was eating her cake off her plate. So it's like, these cats just are bad. It's pretty embarrassing.
I have another acting one. At our campus center in Madison, we do a play every year called Dessert Theater, and we do like an act and have dessert and then. And this year, our play was called Lazarus. It's a Bread for the World. You know, they sponsored it. It's their play. They wrote it and everything. And there's one scene where I'm a mother, and I have a solo with a little boy who's my son, who's singing about how he's hungry and he wants something to eat, and I just sing back how I don't have anything to eat. That's not the funny part, but there's a choir that follows us in as we walk through the audience up to the stage, and they all have their choir robes on and everything, and after I sing my solo or duet with this little boy, I have to go and put my choir robe on and come back, and we do a gospel number where there's someone singing a lead part, and the choir is in kind of a triangle formation, and I'm at the front of the triangle to sort of try and lead swaying so we're not all going opposite directions. And so normally I left my choir robe in the bathroom within easy reach. The rest of the choir had their robes at the other end of the church basement where they walked in after me. But someone had taken my choir robe, so I, you know, walked very slowly off stage and then ran to get my choir robe, and it was not there. So here I am panicking. I need a choir robe. I don't have them. And one person offered me the choir that was much too small. And these are the choir robes that have buttons all down the front, you know, that take forever to get buttoned. And so, someone else handed me another one. I had to put it on. I didn't have any time to change. I couldn't get a button. She was much smaller than I was. So I have this choir robe on. It's much too tight. I can't get a button. We don't have the stoles on, or whatever you call them, over the top. And
I'm at the front of this triangle, trying to sing. My robe is too tight, it's open in the front. I mean, it was embarrassing, but it wasn't as noticeable as I thought it was.
Anybody have a final story to tell? It's been just about an hour. We've been here so long. You have a last story to tell?
One other acting one. I think this was John Gielgud, and I forget what the play was, but it was a kind of a dull play, so the actors were constantly playing jokes on one another throughout it. And this actress one night arranged with the movement, and every movement's the same every night in the play, and she arranged with one of the stagehands to ring the phone right at the moment that Sir John Gielgud was standing beside it. So he was standing beside it, and the phone rang. So he picked it up, said, "Hello? Yes? It's for you, dear."
Well, I appreciate some sharing of stories and telling of stories and some laughs together. It's always good to stop in the midst of our week when we're doing some heavy thinking and talking and all that to take some time to laugh too. So thanks again for coming tonight, and keep telling stories if you want. If you're too afraid to tell them the whole group, you can tell them one other person.
Thank you.